Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
All right, we got our eye on the podium, or rather like a long table, I guess.
The dais? Yeah, exactly.
For Luis Castillo's press conference following his extension with the Seattle Mariners. Also expected to be there, I'm sure, John Stanton, but General Manager Jerry DePoto, and I'm sure that both will have a few questions from reporters. So obviously want to hear from Luis Castillo, the Mariners' ace, but we'll see if there are any other questions about this team during this press conference. So we'll just stay tuned to it once they show up there and figure out what we're going to learn about Castillo and this team. Circling back, though, to some of what we learned about the Mariners today, it was an ugly game. Okay, don't get me wrong. It was one of the worst games, certainly the worst this year, one of the worst I've seen for the Mariners in some time. That said, their playoff odds actually increased 99.8, according to FanGraphs. That's in no small part because the Orioles lost. Actually, you know what? We'll go to Luis Castillo right now.
Thanks, Tim. And thanks all of you for being here today. It's an exciting day to be a Seattle Mariner and an exciting day for our franchise, historic in many respects. Our mission is to win championships, to create delightful experiences for our fans, and to serve our communities. 5 years ago in the winter of 2018, we set out to make some important changes and make that commitment to winning championships, both a long-term and a short-term commitment, and today is evidence, further evidence of our commitment to do so. I'm incredibly appreciative of the work that Jerry DePoto and Justin Hollander did to bring this deal in, and delighted, as I said to Luis upstairs, Luis and his family upstairs, delighted to have him as a Mariner for a very long time. Thank you very much. Jerry?
So with that, I'll talk a little broadly about some of what's happened here, you know, with the Mariners in recent months. Obviously, dating back to August 2nd, when we, you know, the trade deadline, shortly before the deadline, we were able to acquire Luis Castillo and bring him over from the Cincinnati Reds. And I think that deal was one of the real landmark events for us in this ongoing effort to build a championship team. And you know, why I think that's important is because where we are today, this, I think, is another of those landmark events on the heels of doing our extension with Julio and J.P. Crawford and signing Robbie Ray and starting to create the foundation of this championship team, and now extending that and creating what we think is a sustainable championship quality core to move forward with. You know, and Luis being here with us and joining what I think now is a very formidable pitching rotation moving forward. And it starts now, and it started, you know, the beginning of this season. And what we're seeing over the course of the season is very exciting. I know the last week hasn't naturally felt that way, but, you know, this has been a wonderful journey for all of us. And this is just the next step. So, you know, with that, I'm going to kick it to Justin and Rafa. Now, Justin, first I will tip of the cap to Justin and to Rafa for the work they did on this. They did this contract from beginning to end. And, you know, obviously we had to get Luis to get on board with it. And he seemed to like Seattle. So it was a good fit. And really thrilled with the work that everybody did to bring this together. Thrilled to have Luis part of the Mariners for this year and then the next five at least. And, you know, we look forward to what all that brings. But for that, I'll kick it to Justin and Rafa.
I don't really have much to add. I just want to thank Rafa and Luis. I think when we set out on this process and initially Jerry and I approached Rafa to see if he had interest in doing something, it was important to everybody that we were good listeners, and we listened a lot. I think Rafa and I probably had 100 phone calls to get this done, so I appreciate his patience and obviously ownership's commitment to making this happen. I couldn't be more excited to get this done. So, Rafa?
Yeah, well, I agree with you, Justin. Thank you, Jerry, John, and everybody in the organization for believing in Luis, even before this contract. And yeah, I mean, I don't have much to add. I'll let Luis, you know, say how he feels. But we're excited to be here for the next few years and try to get that championship for the city of Seattle.
Luis?
Yep. Saying in Spanish. Bueno, no, contento por este, por ya pertenecer a una familia aquí. Lo que hay que seguir tirando para adelante, trabajando duro y tratar de dar lo mejor de todo, de lo que tenemos en el corazón para así tener la oportunidad de llevar el equipo lo más lejos que podamos. Y si tenemos que ganar la Serie Mundial, estamos preparados para eso.
Just very happy that I'm finally able to join this family long term. Gotta give everything my all, my heart and everything. And if we're prepared to win the World Series, then, you know, let's get out there and do it.
Questions for Luis or the head table?
Jerry, when you first acquired Luis, did you envision you'd be sitting here? I mean, like in the back of your mind, you have control, and maybe we might be able to make this work, or how did that happen?
Yeah, this was the plan. And, you know, fortunately, again, Luis and Rafa made it a reality. But, you know, we acquired Luis like we have built the rest of this roster with the idea that we were building something that we wanted to maintain over time. And, you know, Luis is one of the best pitchers in baseball and has been for quite some time. And, you know, what he's done since he's been in Seattle reinforced for us that he fit. And not just, and you know this is true with our club, not just what he does on the mound, but, you know, who he is as a person, what he does in the clubhouse with our guys. There's I think he goes by the name Piedra, La Piedra, for a reason. You know, there is a presence to Luis every day when he steps out there that is, you know, it's good for our team. And as we build a championship, I guess, a championship model moving forward, it's important to have players like that that carry that presence.
I think it was our first call. Rafa was actually in Europe, and he called me to tell me that he was excited that we had acquired Luis and excited about what we were building, and that once he got back, he'd like to come up and just spend some time with Jerry and I and see if there was something that would work for both sides. You know, Luis really valued stability was the message that we got. So he wanted to be in Seattle. He was excited about the first week, I think, at that point that he'd had with 40,000 Mariner fans cheering him on. It was seemed like a pretty special environment to him, and we obviously worked really hard to make sure that it would be for a long time.
Luis, congratulations, first of all. But, you know, a year from now, you could have been free agency and been courted by 29 other teams. Why did you want to stay here? What stood out about the Mariners that you wanted to stay here long term?
Luis, muchas felicidades primero. En un año tú podrías ser agente libre y firmar con cualquier equipo de la liga. Pero ¿qué fue lo que te convenció en poder quedarte aquí en Seattle?
Bueno, lo que más me convenció es la personalidad que hay aquí en esta organización. Al yo ver y venir y ver toda esa persona que siempre están unidas y un equipo que está compitiendo. A mí me gusta tener como esa sensación de que cuando yo vaya al montículo, tener y dar lo mejor que yo tengo para así poder llevar el equipo más adelante y competir todo el tiempo.
First off, the first thing that really caught my attention was the personality of the team. When I came in here and saw firsthand just the people here and how tight and competitive this team was, it was one of the things that convinced me the most. When I go up on the mound, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm giving the best that I can to go as far as I can, but also have the guys around me, you know, with the same motivation that I have.
Luis, when you think back to that first start here against New York and the atmosphere that was a part of this building that night, now that we're a little bit on, what do you kind of remember of that environment and the moment and that stage?
Cuando tu primer comienzo aquí fue contra Nueva York y obviamente la atmósfera, todo, había mucha energía. Ya estando aquí, ¿qué más recuerdas tú de esa noche, de tu primer comienzo aquí en Seattle?
Bueno, lo que yo más recuerdo esa noche que estaba un poquito nervioso porque primera salida aquí en Seattle y contra los Yankees, que es uno de los equipos que está compitiendo bien. Pero lo que más me emocionó fue la fanaticada. La fanaticada, todos esos fanáticos, bastante, que yo no había pichado tantas veces así con esos fanáticos así. Lo más importante es que salí a dar lo mejor que yo tenía en mi brazo y gracias a Dios pudimos hacer buen trabajo.
The first thing that I remember that night was that I was nervous. I was nervous. It was my first start here in Seattle, and it was against the Yankees, you know, one of the most competitive teams in the league. But the thing that really stood out to me were the fans. I hadn't really pitched that much in some type of atmosphere like that with these kind of fans. And, you know, lucky enough, I was able to go out there. The most important thing was I went out there and gave the best that I could, what I had in my arm. And, you know, blessed and thank God we were able to give up the win.
Luis, how important was it to come in here after the trade, see the personality, like you said, see the culture, and recognize what they're doing here and try to
come in and support the culture? ¿Qué tan importante fue para ti llegar aquí, ver tú personalmente todo lo que el equipo estaba haciendo, la motivación, todo lo que están metiendo en el, antes de hacer tu decisión de poder quedarte aquí más años?
Sí, lo importante es que habían, como está Suárez, está Winker, que yo jugué con ellos en Cincinnati. Sabes que cuando uno va a un equipo nuevo, tú no conoces a nadie, tiene que empezar de cero, hacer amistades con las demás personas. Pero cuando llegué al clubhouse, vi esa motivación de todos los muchachos y puse en mi mente, bueno, yo tengo que incluirme aquí en este grupo y dar lo mejor que yo tengo sobre mí.
I mean, it was important when I came in here that I had Suarez and Winker. But when you come into a new team like this, you kind of don't know anybody. You kind of start from zero. So I saw kind of the relationships and everything that everybody in this clubhouse had. And I thought to myself, I got to be a part of this. And that was kind of the most important thing for me.
Lisa, how different is it going from Cincinnati, where as a team you're building, Boston's a team right now, is competing for
¿Qué tan diferente fue para ti estar en Cincinnati, un equipo que se estaba reconstruyendo, a venir a un equipo como, no, como este que está peleando para meterse a los playoffs? ¿Qué tan importante y qué tan diferente ha sido para ti?
Bueno, lo importante es que tenemos que fajarnos más. Tenemos que fajarnos más, si damos el 100%, dar el 101% de tratar de ayudar al equipo lo más que uno pueda. Y en Cincinnati me sentía bien, ¿sabes? Yo cuando voy a mi montículo, yo voy a dar lo mejor que yo tengo. No importa en la posición que estemos, pero siempre voy a dar lo mejor que yo tengo ahí en la lomita y tratar de ayudar al equipo lo más que yo pueda.
You know, one of the things was when I got here is I realized I got to focus more. We got to be more. If everybody's giving 100%, I got to give 101%. Give that little extra. In Cincinnati, you know, maybe we weren't playing for the playoffs, but every time I went up on that mound, I gave my best to the team, everything I could.
I think, obviously, it goes without saying that extending Luis Castillo, keeping him here in Seattle, not only after what you gave up, but given his overall talent, smartest decision for this club this year outside of, obviously, extending with that huge extension, Julio Rodriguez. I mean, this is part of the World Series roster that you're building. And it sounds funny to say that. I think people think it's too optimistic. This club has a long way to go, Bump. But this is one part.
Estoy muy contento.
Exactly. That's exactly right. What I said.
Yes. Yeah, this is a big piece. This makes you believe that they believe in the nucleus of this organization. You sign a guy like Castillo. You bring in Robbie Ray. Julio got his money. See what they do with Suarez. Like, there are moves that needed to be made, mm-hmm. and I think they are making them. So when you can lock down one of the best pitchers in the game,
hey.
Never a bad idea.
All right. I got drone drama in a minute. Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down. Who is surprisingly the Hawks' best player on offense through 3 weeks?
Preseason, if I would have said this, you would be like, there's no way this guy's the best player on the Hawks offense 3 weeks through the season. This Geno Smith, this guy's completing passes at a very high rate, had over 300 yards. Only the fourth time in his career he threw for over 300 yards. So he's getting better with time. Now, he did not win the game for these guys. He did have opportunity to do that, took a sag, had a penalty. You can point out the negatives, but when you look at the stats, Rashad Penny has had his moments, nothing like Geno yet. Tyler Lockett had one game, 9 catches, 107 yards. Mm-hmm, okay, DK got his first touchdown, but Geno has been moving this thing forward. We got the tight ends involved. Kobe Parkinson had some catches. Will Disley had some catches. Noah Fant had a catch or two last game. Now, it's going to take more than just Geno performing this way for this team to win ball games and for this offense to reach its full potential. But you look at the way Geno is playing, he's playing better than Russell Wilson. He's playing better than Jimmy. The two quarterbacks that one used to be here, the other one people once go get, he's probably playing better than Baker Mayfield. I'm not sure. But I like what he's doing. Geno Smith. Come on. That's an error.
Oh, that's it. We're going to start keeping errors. During the Luis Castillo press conference.
An email notification.
No, I copied and pasted something for another segment that we're doing, and it made a because my monitor and Curtis's are hooked up to
the soundboard
because we play sound. That was an E1 is what that was.
Uh-huh.
Error first chair. Second chair is the analyst. It's E2 on that one.
E2.
Second down. How are the Hawks able to get DK more involved against the Falcons?
You move this man around and you take what the defense is giving you, the short stuff. I saw a hitch, I saw a slant, then they moved him into the slot during his touchdown. It's more of a nasty look, so you get him close to the offensive tackle. You swoop a receiver behind him, he winds up, moves that safety over for you, you send DK down the seam. Geno does a good job with his eyes, giving enough time to throw a dart to DK nice and high. Just move him around.
Yeah.
All right, get him hitches, get him slants. Force the ball to him every now and then. He had a DB beat on the deep ball. Geno underthrew him. That would have been nice.
Yeah.
But 12 targets, they made it a point. Let's get him some looks.
Well, and people are going to criticize him for the catches that he doesn't make. He's going to get 50-50 balls. He's going to get like 40-60 balls, right? He's going to get ones where it's like, look, touchdown, for instance. I'm going to throw it where only DK can catch it.
Yep.
Right? He's going to get a couple of those. And some of those, he's not going to catch it because very few people could. It's just what's going to happen. Sometimes it be like that. Also, if we're going to have E1 and E2 for our errors, do we not have E3 for Curtis?
We got E3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. Third down. What player needs to be the focus in the screen game for the Seahawks?
K9, K3, K-Dub, K-Dub the third, Kenneth Walker. That man needs the ball in the screen game. You saw what he did in a jet sweep, 21-yard gain. Sweeps to the right, cuts back in the middle, gets north and south. He brings something to the table that nobody on this team possesses. I thought D. Eskridge had a bit of that in him. We haven't seen it yet. There's something he's doing or not doing that is not making... that is making Shane just say, like, no, we're going to move along. We're going another direction. But it's still early in the season.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he can grow, learn the playbook a bit more. I'm not sure what it is with him, but Kenneth Walker is something special with the ball in his hands. He got some wiggle, and he finishes his runs with some power. K-Dub.
Fourth down. All right, here's the million-dollar question. How do you fix this defense?
All right, people are going to say that 3-4 is tough against the run. That's the defense that the Hawks play, and you wouldn't be wrong. It is tougher against the run. But I've also seen top five defenses use that same scheme and have success. Mm-hmm. Jaguars only allowing like 55 rush yards per game. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so two out of the top five have that same defense. What's the difference? I think it starts with the edge and the Mike linebackers, or the middle linebackers. The edge, sometimes we're getting too much penetration up the field. You're opening up gaps. Those middle linebackers, they need to attack, get downhill. Once they diagnose the play, sometimes it looks like they're still trying to diagnose the play. Therefore, they're one step behind. And they have to create favorable angles when attacking these guards. If I try to run straight at a guy who is 300 pounds and I'm 220 pounds, he gets his paws on me. Most of the time, he's going to win that game. So if you can diagnose plays early and get favorable angles to make plays, I think you'll be better. I don't see a lot of issue with the scheme. People are going to point to the scheme.
Yeah,
and you can do that. You wouldn't be wrong. Yeah. It is tougher against the run, against the 3-4. But I look at the execution, I'm like, there are some things these young men can do to help the scheme.
Well, and backing up what Bump has said, Pete Carroll said this multiple times. Clint Hurt said it earlier this week. They're going to get questions about the 3-4 base defense. And every time they fielded those questions, Clint Hurt most recently, they just kind of say, like, it's not as big a deal as you guys think it is.
Yeah.
Like, you're making it sound like we're dramatically changing everything we do, but we're not. There's going to be some adapting required. But
yeah.
The last point you mentioned about the players making it work, what do you mean?
I mean, during a press conference that Jenna Nowosu who said, you know, there was a boot and they got too far afield. I need to do my job. All right, I'm with you. And then you look at Daryl Taylor sometimes when he's the force player, right, he's contained. He's got to force everything back inside. He's going inside. So now there's no contain. You got a DB on the outside who's in a zone. He's not worried about, you know, a sweep his way or whatnot. You look at maybe the linebackers and them taking the wrong step, right? They're taking the bait. You got the fullback going to the right. Cody Barton takes a strong step to the right, but then they send the running back the other way. Now he's behind. So it comes down to film study. It comes down to technique and just doing your job. Sometimes not making the play is making the play.
All right, Kalen DeBoer just reignited a controversy from Saturday's game between the Huskies and Stanford. I'll get to that next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, this hour, Bump and Stacy, brought to you by Mazda of Everett. Let's see what's on tap. Powered by Madden Industrial Craftsman. Monday Night Football between the Giants and Cowboys. Kickoff is at 5:15 p.m. right now, though. And more importantly than all of this, we got drone drama. That was a...
Here we go.
That was an
E3. There we go.
That was an E3. Can we do it one more time? We got drone drama. Yeah, that feels like some good TMZ stuff. So during the Seahawks broadcast, it was reported that the drone that halted play between UW and Stanford was actually owned by the University of Washington and they lost control of it. Well, how the tables have turned. Mike Varell, friend of the show, covers UW for the Seattle Times, said Kalen DeBoer reiterated the drone that delayed Saturday's game was not owned by or affiliated with UW Athletics. The drone operator remains at large.
Now, serious folks,
is the theory that it was actually Fox because the game was the game on FS1?
I believe it was on the mothership.
Hear me out,
Fox.
Hear me out. It was a Fox drone.
It was Brock's. It was Brock's drone. He works for
Brock.
Fox.
Brock knows.
Yeah, that's interesting. No one wants to claim that thing, huh?
Well, no, because it's very illegal.
It is very illegal.
I mean, you can have obviously your own broadcast, but to have if you are a random person flying a drone over a stadium, it's illegal.
Yeah, you can't do that.
No, I think it's like a pretty serious crime.
Really?
Yeah, not like punishable by death, but like
I think
plus.
You got to register them with the FAA.
No, seriously, it becomes like a.
No, that's real. When I fly my drone and it's close to, like, so I go to, my son has tournaments in Yakima.
Yeah.
And I'll fly the drone and record the games. There's like an airfield next to it.
I
have to ask for permission.
Yep.
Like, it's real
stuff. People are serious about it. So anyways, we need to know who the drone operator is. It also leaves open the possibility that A, it was Fox's drone and they lost control of it. Or B, there is a drone operator who was operating both drones at both the Seahawks and Huskies game.
Or C, Brock did both of those things.
It was Brock.
There's
no way. There is no way Brock knows how to work a drone.
You know what I say about two drone delays in the same weekend?
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once. Shame on
you.
Shame on you. It fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
Exactly.
I've always,
Curtis has always said that about drones. Always. All right. Going to get to a little fun stuff here. Curtis, you're going to have to play this one. I'm going to cut number 12. Robbie Ray and Royals pitcher Luke Weaver were both ejected before Sunday's game that let's all forget about after today for participating in a national anthem standoff.
Hopefully, no fire. Get your justices. Get out of here. Get out of here. He's suddenly going over to the Royals. And come on, he's waving them off. Get out. And now the third base up for Marvin Hudson. You got to go. You got to go. Cut it. Cut it. And now Marvin Hudson telling Robbie to get lost, too. Now Marvin Hudson's coming down. He's the third base.
You got to go.
I've not seen this get to this point. Now
Robbie wins. Robbie won.
The Royal dude took off. Robbie raises his fist to the Mariner fans here at Kauffman Stadium. Robbie Ray with the W to get the Mariners going here. Oh. The final road game of the season.
Amazing. Love a national anthem standoff. Haven't yet seen it in a major league game. I haven't personally. Also, is it just me or is this ump being way too serious about this?
Yes.
Guys, it's a game.
Relax, bro.
It's
relax.
Seriously.
Just tell them, okay, that's enough, guys.
please go to your dugouts. Like, you should have seen the ump's face, too. He was like, get off of my lawn type of anger.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this is something I've seen plenty of times.
Then it prompted us into this huge conversation about, like, how umps don't really have to be super accountable for stuff and how unfair that is. And you reminded me of the near-perfect game should have been game.
Jim Joyce and Armando Galarraga.
Yes.
Yeah, they just have no accountability because it's like, dude, why are you getting in your feelings about something that is completely harmless? It may have delayed the start of the game by a minute, by 2 minutes, whatever. But no one's going anywhere for the next 3 hours, buddy. Like, this game's going to get played whether or not.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are on the field.
Just let them continue to have the standoff or just tell them, like, all right, guys, wrap it up, let's go. Yeah. And just see if one of them caves, the weaker one.
Boys will be
Luke
boys.
Weaver.
Yeah, exactly.
Coward.
Yeah, exactly. The coward Luke Weaver. That's what we refer to him on this show. I also gave us a little bit of a homework assignment. Okay. We have today, rightfully so, been upset. We have rightfully so been negative Nellies. I would say pragmatic Pollies.
Negative Nelly, huh?
Maybe not a negative Nelly.
Well, a negative Nancy.
Negative Nancy. I am forcing us to point to one silver lining from a bad weekend of Seattle sports.
Bad
it can be
weekend.
About any of the teams that lost. So UW is off the table.
So funny, Stace. Okay, I will start with my Cougars.
Yeah.
Cam Moore can play.
Yeah.
Dude balled out. Coming from a lower level college to doing the things he does now. I know he threw that interception, but Cam can play. Am I going to the Seahawks now, or am I doing all of them now, or are we going back and forth?
We can go back and forth.
Okay, go
so
for
you
it.
Have time to. So I'm not putting you on the spot too much, because that way we have time to think of them.
Yep.
Because it was bad, a lot of bad. But I also want them to be things where it's like, okay, this is genuinely okay.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how you move forward. So, I think for the Mariners, the obvious one would be the Orioles lost.
Yep.
Nothing to do with the Mariners. The Orioles losing is pretty much the only silver lining to come from that game, because you maintain your five-game lead on Baltimore. Curtis is not altogether confident that the Mariners can still make the postseason. Their playoff odds went up with the Orioles loss.
Yeah, people are like, oh, it's 100%. It's like, no, the only time the Mariners can have 100% playoff odds is after they've clinched, okay? Like, there is still a possibility that this doesn't happen, and I'm not feeling super confident, especially after the week that we just saw them play.
All right.
Okay.
Let's think of another one.
Let's go with the Seahawks.
Sorry for bringing the mood down.
No, that's okay. Fine. It's okay.
Man,
I mean,
we live in reality here, Curtis.
I mean, I'll come up with a silver lining to make up for it.
You'll be next.
Okay.
The Seahawks, silver lining is Tariq Woolen, man.
Yeah.
Every week, he gets better at something. First week, he says, look, I haven't played corner in a while, or for very long. I'm going to set the edge and make a tackle, something you don't ask a corner to do. Second week, okay, special teams, block that. Mike Jack, scoop that, score that. Third week, don't trip, no interceptions. I got you. 2-7, attacking the ball out the air. Tariq Woolen is progressing.
The 206 on the Mac and Jack's text line says JK hitting is a silver lining.
That was the one I was going with.
Yeah, well, why don't you roll with that one, Curtis?
Six for 16 on the road trip, a home run, three doubles, two walks, only three strikeouts at 375, had an OPS of about, 1,100?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously that is a pace that you can't keep up over the course of an entire season, but to see it from a guy who has struggled so much at the major league level, especially in how important all these games are remaining with the rest of the season, you could not ask for more from Jared Kelnick or more from anybody right now, especially in a lineup that has gone ice cold as of late. To see him contribute in a big way has been a very welcome sight to see.
Now, I'm kind of cheating because this wasn't from a game, but I do think a silver lining from the weekend is extending Luis Castillo.
Yeah.
I know that people are going to be bummed because of the game and they're going to, you know, be upset or think it's a lot of money, but I actually think that was a big silver lining coming from the weekend. Also, can I just say Seahawks offense as a whole? I know there was only a field goal scored in the second half, but baby steps.
Yeah.
Baby steps,
like
you guys.
That.
They got a couple touchdowns. Found out how to use DK. After saying they wanted to use DK, they actually did it.
Actually did it.
That's a nice silver lining.
Yeah, it is. I like that. I like DK getting involved, the tight ends getting involved, Geno still completing a high percentage of his throws. Yeah, offense looking good. All right. And K-Dub, K-Third.
Final 30 seconds. I'm going to get to the Mac and Jack's text line. The 253 said the Mariners figured out how to score with bases loaded and no outs. I mean, hey.
I like that too.
That's one way to look at it. Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, those were our silver linings from an otherwise tough Seattle sports weekend. Let's see if they can bounce back next weekend. You are listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Wrapping up the show with What I Need to Know. It's coming your way next. Get your questions in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, it's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Get your questions in, any question you have, right now to the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. Again, 866-979-3776. First question.
Don't make us hit you with the jingle.
Do we still have it?
I mean, we know it off the top of our heads.
Yeah. No, Bump doesn't want to play this game.
Oh, okay.
866-979-3776. He did it so reluctantly. All right, What I Need to Know. Do you see the Huskies winning out the... Oh, sorry. Do you see the Huskies winning out the rest of the season, and do you think, obviously, that if they do so, they can make the playoffs?
If they do, they'll definitely make the playoffs.
You think so? Like, how sure are you? I'm nervous. Because, obviously, I think they're going to win every single game.
Stacey, I don't know how to respond to you right now.
Well, I feel like it's an uphill battle. What happens if they win out, but then you've got Ohio State and Clemson and Georgia and Bama? I feel like it's just forever going to be a version of those four teams.
Who cares? Who cares about you, Dub?
No,
If they win out, they could win out.
Okay.
Let's be real.
Yes.
Because they're not playing SC. They're not playing Utah.
They will.
They definitely could win out. And if they do, they'll win the conference and they'll be in the college football playoff. Yeah. All right. Do they expand it this year? Is it this year or next year?
No, it's the earliest it could be 24.
We're still a couple years away from 12 teams getting in.
Yeah, they'll get in if they win out. I think they can get in if they lose one, honestly. If they can just keep putting up the numbers offensively that they've been putting up.
Boy. That's key.
You got to have style points.
And if they lose one, that's going to be tough. Just because the only ranked team they have remaining right now is number 13, Oregon. And if you beat UCLA, you go on a stretch of three games at ASU, at home against Arizona, at Cal. You should win those, but none of those teams are going to impress this.
My Huskies will beat Oregon in your honor, to defend your honor.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Colorado's really bad, by the way.
Yeah, that's surprising.
They might not win a game.
Yeah,
that's shocking.
I read a stat today. They're the first team since like 1960 among the Power Five schools to lose their first four games by at least 25 points in each of them.
Man. Brandon Gibson, tight end coach, former Coug, man, hang in there, baby.
What I Need to Know, Pac-12 After Dark, nice black short socks, looking sharp, Bump.
Hey.
Just a comment.
Appreciate that.
What I Need to Know, is Pete going to allow the offense to be this pass heavy the entire year?
I think if it works, you know, as long as Geno's taking care of the ball and they're moving it down the field, it works. But as soon as you struggle, he showed that with Russell Wilson. As soon as you start struggling, turn the ball over, not producing, he'll take over.
Also, this game kind of called for it. Like, you could find Atlanta's defense has given up yardage. They've given up points. Mm-hmm. Okay? Like, they've scored 26 points in each of their games. They've allowed more than 26 points in each of the two games prior to this one against Seattle. So I think that this game called for passing, and Pete Carroll last week said we had opportunities to pass more and didn't do it, and so we want to take them. I don't think this is going to be every game because this isn't going to be every defense.
That's a great point.
Is that
Stacey.
Okay. What I Need to Know, are Charles Cross and Abe Lucas as good as I think they are?
Yeah, they are. I talked to Big Ray. Big Ray said they probably will be the guys for the next 10 years at that spot.
Wow.
That's how good he thinks they are.
The good news, you haven't heard Cross's name called. Oh. You've heard Lucas's, but one of those was a horrible call.
Yep.
Barely holding.
Barely.
I mean, not holding. It's like the the Quandre Diggs call yesterday. That was, you had in a professional setting, which is the press box, people going, are you kidding me? That's weak.
Ridiculous.
Weak. What I Need to Know, At any point this season, I'm assuming, yes, at any point this season, will we see a 21-point lead for the Seahawks?
21-point lead?
If there was going to be a game,
it
would have to be Detroit.
The Lions put up points, though.
That's what I'm saying.
Man, no, I don't see that.
No, I don't either.
I think this team is built.
You got to be a pretty good team.
Seahawks have a home game against Carolina December 11th.
Carolina's defense is better than you think.
Yeah. They've got a home game against the Jets January 1st. The Jets are terrible.
Yeah, the Jets have been bad. Yeah, I could see the Jets. I can see potentially the Jets. All right, what I need to know. Is it possible for JK to end the year with a better batting average than last year without having to hit at a ridiculous clip? This feels mathy to me.
Yeah.
This feels mathy. Curtis, do you know the answer?
I'm pulling up his stats right now. He finished the 2021 season hitting 181. He is at 155 right now. He would have to go on a massive tear to surpass that. But one good thing is his baseball reference WAR this season is actually a positive. It's 0.1.
There you go.
Last year it was negative 1.8. So he has been a positive contributor by WAR standards in a major league uniform in 2022. To this point in the season.
So take
it's at 0.1, so there's still possibility he'd go down.
What I need to know from the 360, I don't remember this. Is it just me or did the Cougs and Huskies run the same trick play?
What trick play?
What trick
play? A little
play?
Flea flicker?
I mean, flea flicker in itself is
ours,
not.
We did that the very first play of the game. I don't remember UW doing it. They did it?
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that. No.
We need more details, 360.
I know who did run the same play.
Up.
Cal and Stanford ran the same play where they fake like they fumbled the ball on the snap and then threw it up.
How often do teams just borrow the exact same play from other teams?
All the time.
In the pros, too?
All the time.
When's the last time you saw that?
This weekend.
Which two teams?
Stanford and Cal.
Oh.
They ran the same play.
I saw it pointed out on Twitter last night that the 49ers scored their touchdown against Denver using the same play the Seahawks did that ended Super Bowl 49.
When I was coordinating, I literally took a play from a team every single week, at least.
What I need to know, will the Teal Tuesday curse that was put on the Mariners last Tuesday be broken tomorrow?
That
sounds like a question you need to answer
yes,
yourself.
Yes, I literally wrote I set a reminder in my phone to wear teal tomorrow. I know that I should just know it. And it should just be part of me.
Things were never the same after last Tuesday.
I literally was
about to walk out the house and go, oh, it's Tuesday, and turn back and threw the hat on.
I didn't remember until you walked in the door and, like, looked at me in a very disappointed way. what I need to know, let's go last question here. What would your walk-up song be if you played for the Mariners?
The Mariners.
I'll let you get the last word on this one.
This is how we do it.
That would get the crowd going.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what, that would be a crowd favorite. All right, you guys, that'll do it for us today. We'll be back with you tomorrow. As a reminder, no Mariners game. We're sending you right now to Wyman and Bob here on Seattle Sports Station.